Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. Today it's going to be more than mind power. It's going to be body, mind, power. In fact, a sound mind in a sound body enables one to be healthy, happy, and I'm going to add the word sassy, because I think life is for living, and wellness enables us to do exactly that. My guest today, who has put together the book A Sound Mind in a Sound Body, is Dennis Kravets. And this is a man that really walks his walk when he talks the talk. And he says, we've got a lot that we can do for ourselves that can empower us to be the healthy person we want to be. Especially, listen to this, if you want to live to be over 100, do you think that that's a possibility? Do you think you end up having to be old, cranky, and not be able to move if you were 100 years old? I got news for you. More and more people are living to be over 100, and we're going to find out why. I want to welcome to the show Dennis Kravets. Dennis, thank you for being my guest today.
Great to be with you, Donna.
Now, Dennis, you're a man that obviously really has a passion for empowering people. You have a real zest for life in your own special way. You've done a number of books and quite a few articles, and you've done training films, screenplays. You've just been involved in so many different aspects. You are a mature person, and you have found how important health is. Now, most people would say, well, for heaven's sakes, Donna, we all know that we're supposed to be healthy. Any ding-dong would know that. But a lot of people don't pay attention to that, Dennis. Why do you think that is?
I think it's just, for the most part, they don't realize that they control their own fate. They tend to think how long they're going to live is just due to luck or chance or genetics. They don't realize it's their own doing that's going to determine the ultimate outcome. At least 75 to 90% of it is determined by you. The rest is due to other things. And that's why they don't try. In many cases, they're just not educated enough, I guess is the best way to express it, in the subject area to know what to do.
Now, you have been recognized by your peers about the aspect of psychology. How much does this impact the attitude of taking care of oneself?
It has a huge impact. There are actually four factors that determine how long you live, and avoiding disabling diseases such as cardiovascular disease and cancer. Two of those four factors are more psychologically oriented. I call one cognitive enrichment and the other psychological states of mind. So that makes up about 50% of how long you live is things more involving the mind than the body per se. Needless to say, the two are very much intertwined, and it's kind of hard to separate one from the other when you talk about the subject, but we can do so. And it's very important. Some of the research that's most recently come up shows that psychological states of mind may be the most important area in determining how long people live, even more important than physical fitness and nutrition, which would shock a lot of people to know that. Now, definitive work on this hasn't been done yet, but that's what some of the preliminary findings are suggesting.
Well, I think that it does have a lot to do with overall wellness. And so many of us have experienced attitudes, depending on what generational environment we're in. And it's been attitudes of everything from, gee whiz, you shouldn't have an ounce of fat on your body, to, well, just eat yogurt and you'll be okay, to high doses of vitamins. And now it seems like we're turning a corner. where people are starting to say to themselves, wait a minute, all this stuff was so good, how come it failed so dramatically, this extremism? And it seems like we're coming into a different modality of understanding. And not that it's an old idea, but it's to honor and respect the chassis, that's what I'll term the body, this chassis that we're occupying, and to really respect it and to appreciate it. And this is something that you cover in your book. And I found some of your facts and your details quite interesting. You were talking in your book about a Dr. Thomas Pearls. He's with the Boston University Medical Center. He studies centenarians, those who live to be 100 years or more. And in 2006, now this is in the U.S., I know there's been other studies done in the past, but there were 32 people that participated in this study. All of them were U.S. citizens living here, and they were anywhere from 110 to 119 years old. Now, I don't think I'd ever heard about a 119-year-old being here in the United States. I've heard of other people in other parts of the world, like in the Himalayas, that got to be that old. But 119, you said, is the oldest recorded person in the United States, and everything was confirmed by birth certificate. There may be some other people that have lived to be that age, but they didn't have a birth certificate. And none of these people, none of these 32 individuals had experienced serious health problems. Fewer than 15% had cardiovascular disease. Only 25% had ever had cancer, and all of them had come out of that. Only 3% had diabetes. And the same percentage, 3%, had Parkinson's. And a good portion of them, almost half of them, were still living on their own. That's a profound statement.
Yeah, it's the thing that probably shocked me the most with that study, because it looked at everyone in the U.S. who was 110 or older, not just a sample, but every single individual. So it was very comprehensive. And the fact that many of them were on their own, still getting around, in a couple of cases actually still driving a car at that age.
It's
kind of mind-boggling that people are still that active at that age, but that is indeed the case with these individuals, some of them at least, that were very active. So it does point out that extreme age is a possibility, though getting to highly, highly advanced ages like that are rare. But making it to 90, of course, is a much easier thing to do if people live their lives correctly.
You bring out right in the very first section of your book how important, how very important it is to have a physical exercise regimen of some type. And people don't need to go out and try to do massive marathons, and they can if they want. But that's not the issue. The issue is that the body needs to move. And you go into some aspects regarding metabolic enzymes, burning fat. Talk about the importance of the liver. Let's go into this and let's make the association with exercise and why it is so important.
Well, first and foremost, aerobic exercise correlates with every major problem that there is, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia, Alzheimer's. All those are seriously impacted in a positive way by doing regular aerobic exercise. Aerobic exercise means that you're in motion, you're using the legs. It can be walking, jogging, bicycling, swimming, tennis, basketball, soccer. There's many, many things you can do that involve the use of the legs, but that's what we mean by aerobic exercise. And it does have a major impact on those key diseases that prevent people from attaining a nice age. Also, what goes on in the body, it helps neutralize a lot of saturated fat, which is a problem that many Americans have. They're eating too much saturated fat. And when you exercise regularly, your body generates an enzyme called lipase. And lipase is an enzyme that helps you digest fat and convert fat into energy. people get regular aerobic exercise, and by regular, this would mean 5 days a week, about 30 minutes of walking, or if you prefer to do something more vigorous, it would be 3 to 4 days a week of jogging at 20 minutes per session. Those two will be equivalent in terms of your metabolism and how much benefit you will get. But in both cases, you would generate a lot more lipase in your body. Lipase converts fat into energy. So people who do a lot of aerobic exercise, their bodies become very efficient at converting fat into energy. People who are sedentary, their bodies are totally inefficient at converting fat into energy. So the fat is trapped inside of their bodies, literally cannot be burned. So it's a rare thing. We have enzymes for burning carbohydrate and protein as well, but they are not affected by exercise. So pretty much every human being on the planet has the same amount of enzymes for burning carbohydrate and protein. But lipase only gets generated as a result of doing regular aerobic exercise. One study in my book showed that just a single episode of exercise, just one time, people were measured before and after, and they had more lipase in their bloodstream after that one episode of light exercising than before. So if you do regular aerobic exercise, again, there's a lot of lipase gets generated, makes your body very efficient at converting fat into energy, which is why it's so important for diet and other things. But this also prevents the saturated fat from building up, forming plaque in your arteries, and later on causing a heart attack or stroke.
You mentioned two words in your book I've never heard before. That's nothing new. There's a lot of things I don't know. But this is telomeres and telomerase. What are they?
Well, telomeres are actually cap pieces inside of each cell of your body, and you have 100 trillion cells in the human body, an awful lot. Inside each cell, there's a control center. It's called a chromosome. Many people have taken a biology class have probably heard of a chromosome before. Chromosome contains your DNA and another structure called RNA, which tells the cell in your body what its job is and how to do its job. Well, there's a cap piece on each chromosome. A chromosome looks like a Cheeto if you were to look at one under a microscope at very high power. And there's a cap piece on both ends of that Cheeto-looking thing called a chromosome that's called a telomere. Well, we found a number of years ago that our cells in our body, 99% of them are mortal. They have only a fixed span. And they actually divide at various points in our life, but the number of times they can divide is limited to 52. And each time the cell divides, it actually clones itself, half of the telomere, the cap piece, goes with the newly created cell and half stays with the parent. Once this occurs 52 times, the cell cannot divide anymore, and that's because the telomeres are too short and it cannot be split into two anymore. So the cells at that stage in a person's life are known to be senescent, and senescent cells are much more susceptible to disease, infection, malfunctioning, and also dying. If you had one cell in your body that was senescent, no big deal, but if you have a bunch of cells in your body that are senescent, the person is going to die, and sooner rather than later. And this is now accepted by all the researchers in the area, that cell senescence is going to lead to a relatively short span of life from the point where the individual reaches cell senescence. Now, the interesting thing about it is that people do not have telomeres that are the same from individual to individual. People who do a lot of aerobic exercise, as an example, have longer telomeres on average than people who are sedentary. So the benefits of doing the things that I recommend in my book, not only do these things correlate directly with how long you live and lessening cardiovascular disease and cancer, but it even controls things at a very, very microscopic level in determining how long your telomeres are going to be and whether or not those telomeres still have enough length in them to split into two when the cell divides. So people, in a nutshell, who take really good care of themselves are preserving their cell division. The cells will not divide as often. And it's been shown in very powerful research that when people take poor care of themselves, no exercising, under a lot of stress and anxiety, depression, the cells are very stressed out and they divide prematurely. And again, the person uses up those cell divisions, uses up their telomeres at a younger age.
You bring something up in your book. I've heard a lot of advertisements about this, and it's the human growth hormone. And you have a section in your book that deals with this and psychology. And I have heard all kinds of things about this, and it's usually abbreviated as GH. And I was intrigued by the research that came up about the human growth hormone. And I, in fact, I have a neighbor that had mentioned to me, I think it was about a year ago, that this is something she was taking on a regular basis. And I thought, I don't know why. It really bothers me, but I just don't feel like it's something that people should ingest. What is the human growth hormone? And what are the studies that show that it really doesn't do what's being promoted?
Yeah, it's been in the news of late, too, with baseball players and others. This is one of several designer drugs that some players are taking to supposedly make them better performers, but it really doesn't do that. But they think it does it, and they may get a psychological boost, even though physiologically the evidence is very powerful that it doesn't make you stronger or live longer or anything. But growth hormone is very aptly named. It's the hormone that we create on our own, inside our own bodies, in the pituitary gland, which is like in the center of your brain. And it does foster growth when you are a child. And its production, once you reach adulthood, goes down to a very low level. You still generate some through the remainder of your life, but it's a very, very limited amount. Some people have thought, well, if we're generating lots of growth hormone when we're children or very young adults, maybe it'd be a good idea if we had growth hormone in our bodies for the rest of our lives. But the research has shown, I talked to one of these researchers personally, and he said there's a very good reason that we don't generate it in big quantities the rest of our life, and that's because it harms you. You know, it serves its purpose in helping you grow in stature when you're a child, but once you reach your full adult height, it only does harm. It doesn't do any good. But the research has shown that people who are taking growth hormone, thinking that it's going to make them younger or stronger or whatever the motive might be, the actual research itself shows that they're increasing dramatically the risk of type 2 diabetes. They increase the risk of carpal tunnel syndrome, which is the nerves going to the hand. You could have numbness, you could have pain, but it's correlated with that. And another very serious problem, which is called tissue edema. Tissue edema is when too much fluid builds up in each cell in your body, and these cells are sort of sloshing around. They can't do their job because there's too much liquid inside of them. Those are the things that correlate with taking growth hormone once you are a fully grown adult. It's a lot of bad news, and the studies on physical performance, length of life, those things show absolutely nothing. But the only thing that the study has ever shown is that some people who think they're getting a boost will actually perform a little bit better. Just it's purely psychological. They have no physiological edge, but they think they're getting something that might help them, and that boosts their motivation. But they could do this in other ways just by exercising more. They don't need a drug to do this, but it's become $1.5 billion a year business here in the U.S. alone, growth hormone as a supplement, and it's a very bad thing. People should really stay away from this, but unfortunately many are not.
Well, again, I think lots of times in the American psyche, with all of the advertising and promotion that goes on, and when you see people that seemingly have reversed, depending on who's playing the role, there is the reality that we are mentally almost programmed to fear aging, unlike cultures in other parts of the world where they respect people as they get older. This is not something that typically we do here in the United States. And it's a sad statement, I think, about us, because we don't need to look at getting older as being something that is going to destroy our lives. We don't need to walk around like a bunch of antiquated fossils. And you can be very active physically, emotionally, mentally, and, you know, spiritually. There's no reason to go to the dark ages. This isn't necessary. Remaining mentally sharp as one ages. Now, because people are living so much longer, and a great deal of this has been accomplished because, one, we have better sanitation than our ancestors did, and, two, because we have an availability of food, and we don't have to be out working ourselves to death, literally, as so many people in third world countries find that they do. They age at a tremendous pace. Staying mentally sharp, you would think, would not be a big issue. But there is, again, an attitude that once you hit your 60s, well, it's downhill here from there. I mean, that's it. You're just, once you're in your 60s, forget it. Your brain cells are dying. Well, now they know that's not the truth. Now they know that the brain is very plastic, pliable, and that we, if we have good nutrition, if we stay active physically, and we are willing to be involved in life, we're going to live a lot longer than our ancestors even dreamed of living. And we can be functional, productive adults. I know people in their 70s and 80s that are flying planes, that are running businesses, that are very much involved in life. Some of them are doing volunteer work. But they're still working. One, the economy shows them that they don't. They're going to be financially feeling very bereft. But other than that, they really are interested in life. And you made a comment in your book, one of the reasons we like older people to run for positions of office rather than younger ones is because, one, they're supposed to have more experience. That's not necessarily the case. But they're supposed to be a little bit wiser. They've been around the block a few times in life. And so they are supposed to bring to the table a wisdom with the experience that they have that is going to enable them to make good decisions. Let's talk about staying sharp as you get older. I can tell you, I've met a lot of young people that I really feel in the brain department that they're walking around in a fog. A lot of people would say that's not unusual, but it seems like the fog just seems to stay with them many times through their entire life. Staying mentally sharp, what is the best thing to do?
Well, there's two sets of things that will keep you cognitively sharp and avoid decline. And, of course, if that decline is more severe, we would label it dementia or Alzheimer's disease. Those two conditions both have the same symptoms, with the exception of one symptom that differentiates the two, but that's just referring to a more serious cognitive decline. But in both cases, they're impacted positively by aerobic exercise that we were talking a bit about earlier. And this surprises a lot of people because they never think that aerobic exercise has anything to do with your cognitive health. But as I point out to people, they've probably proven this to themselves and not realized that if they're at home one day or at an office and they're trying to make a really tough decision or solve a tough problem, they're thinking about it, and it's not happening. And now they go out for a walk or a bicycle ride, and all of a sudden the solution pops into their brain, even when they're not trying to think of the answer. Well, what happened there is the exercise increased the blood flow to all parts of the body, but most importantly to the brain. It brought fresh nutrients, fresh oxygen to the brain, and the brain can work more effectively when it gets a constant and good supply of nutrients and oxygen. In fact, your brain is about the most hungry part of your body for certain types of nutrients like glucose and the need of fresh oxygen. Well, what happens here is that most people, either intentionally or unintentionally, become less and less physical, reactive as they age, and this contributes to their own cognitive decline. People are more active in their 20s than in their 30s, and their 30s than in their 40s, and so on, and they're bringing about their own decline. So about 40% of cognitive health is actually regular aerobic exercise that we were speaking of earlier. Same things as before, walking, jogging, bicycling, can be a variety of things. The other 60% is things that you do with your brain, and in short, you got to use it or you're going to lose it. Most of us who have white-collar jobs have some insulation against cognitive decline as long as we're working. Research here has shown that people who are learning things on a regular basis, they're actually doing a rewiring of their brain. Each time you learn something new, that memory has to reside in your brain, and your brain is actually rewiring itself, albeit on a small scale. So if you work a white-collar job or a technician's-type job, this insulates you pretty well from cognitive decline as long as you're working. But what happens? Some people in their 50s or 60s or some other age say, well, I'm not going to work anymore. I'm going to retire. And they sit around the house all day. They run a couple errands. They play around the golf. They thumb through a magazine. But there's no active learning going on. They're not developing the brain very much. I, as a management coach and counselor, counsel many people in the workplace as well as in retirement, and people who are not working as well. My clients are quite diverse. But for those who have corporate jobs, I could see these dynamos who are executives in a corporation that in the first 2 years of retirement, they age like 5, 10, 15 years in the first 2 years. Because they're not doing anything with their brains. Now, they may or may not be doing the physical stuff, but they're not using their brains anymore. They're not learning new things. And I could see they're slower in comprehending questions. They're slower to answer. They have more difficulty recalling things, and they've only been retired for 2 years. So it's the retirement itself that's contributing to the problem in a big way, and people don't realize this. Now, for those who don't want to work or don't want to do volunteer work as a substitute for a regular-type job in their retirement years, there are other solutions as well. Most people have heard that puzzles are very effective, and they are. Crossword puzzles, there's a wide variety of brain teasers, cross-sticks, double cross-sticks, cryptograms, and the list goes on and on. There are new hobbies people can take up. Board games and card games that involve strategy or solving puzzles are particularly effective. You can play these at home with those who have a TV show like Jeopardy that you can watch along with, or you can play against a computer or against a human being in a board game. So there's a lot of varieties here, but games like Wheel of Fortune and Scrabble, Risk, chess, that again involve strategy or problem solving are very, very effective in maintaining cognitive health. Visiting zoos, historical sites, museums, and not just being a passive visitor where you say, oh, look at the baby lions and kind of keep walking, but reading those signs that are there, asking questions of the volunteers or employees who work there. You know, what are the lions' names? What are their diets, et cetera? So you learn something new from that experience. Again, when you're working, this is pretty easy, but once you retire, you may go cold turkey from working at a furious pace to doing nothing. So these are the other things that substitute for work. Obviously, you can take continuing education courses. I'm not talking about calculus, but going to a community college and getting better at photography or how to trace your family history, or they have courses on things like this that can help you,
Dennis,
staying active in that way.
Yes, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. And your reservoir of knowledge, you have so much information in your book, A Sound Mind in a Sound Body. And before we say goodbye, I want to mention your website, longlifeforme.com. And that's longlife, the number four, and then the word me.com. Your book, A Sound Mind in a Sound Body, is just loaded with wonderful stories, including a story about your grandfather who lived to be in his 90s, and that is well worth the read. It's just a wonderful story. And Dennis, I want to thank you very much for being my guest. For those of you listening, Dennis Kravets is the author, Kravetz, A Sound Mind in a Sound Body. Great addition to your health library. Thank you again, Dennis, for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back, and today we are getting a bonus in the way of working, understanding how to work in business, how to work with money. Now, this is something that all of us are involved with. And if you are looking at some of the changes that might be occurring tax-wise, and you are saying to yourself, I think I want to go into business for myself, but you're concerned about the best way to do it. My guest today, Garrett Sutton, who is the founder of Corporate Direct, Inc., the Sutton Law Center in Reno, Nevada, is with us today. And Garrett's going to be sharing some information, and we're going to be calling it the corporate veil. What is it? Hi, Garrett. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Garrett, we have so many people that are deciding that they really want to go into business for themselves. They wonder, how do we go about setting up a corporation? But what is a corporate veil? What is that? What do we need to know?
Well, Donna, it's a very good question. The corporate veil provides you with protection. If you set up your business as a sole proprietor or a general partnership, you have no protection. If you get sued in your business, someone can reach all of your personal assets, the equity in your house, your bank account, everything is exposed. By using a corporation or an LLC, we lift the corporate veil of protection, meaning that if someone sues the business, they can only get what's inside the business. They can't get beyond that corporate veil and go after your personal assets. So when you're starting a business or you've started out in business as a sole proprietor general partnership, you really need to think about using one of these entities chartered by the state that gives you the protection you need to move forward.
Now, with this, there are going to be some people saying, oh, I don't know, do I have to have an attorney for this? How do I go about it? Now, there is the LLC, there's the S corporation, and the C corporation. What are the options available to a person?
Well, the options include a C corporation and an S corporation. They're both corporations. They're just taxed differently. or the LLC, which stands for Limited Liability Company, or in some cases the LP, which is a limited partnership, all of these offer the corporate veil of protection. All of them offer asset protection that you need in business because, let's face it, Donna, we live in a very litigious society.
Oh,
people
boy.
Are suing all the time.
True.
And knowing that, we have to protect ourselves.
All right. So here we have someone that's getting ready to start in business. And I know of a woman whose husband, she was advised by her CPA, form a corporation, form an S corporation. This is going to help you tax-wise. It's going to give you this benefit, that benefit, the other benefit. Yes, you're going to have to do filing. Her corporation wasn't very big. So, in fact, it was rather small, but he said, you're going to have benefits here. What is the process? Now, the husband said, no, that you should have stayed a sole proprietorship. This is ridiculous. Why would you do this? You don't make enough money, because the husband had been involved in a very large business environment, and that's where his thinking was. Was he wrong? And how is this woman with her CPA in a better positioning by doing the S corporation? He recommended, the CPA recommended that over the LLC.
All right. Well, and there are certain times where the S corporation makes more sense. You can minimize payroll taxes a little bit better with an S corporation. But as to the general question, having an entity, be it a corporation or an LLC, versus a sole proprietor, the husband is looking at the wrong factor. It's not how much money you're making in your business. It's how much you have to lose. And so even if you're only making $10,000 a year in your business, you could get sued as a sole proprietor, and they can reach all of your other assets. And so the husband was not looking at the correct issue. The issue is having that protection so that they can't get beyond the corporation or LLC to the husband's personal assets. So the CPA was correct. You do want an entity. Now, there are times when you're going to use an LLC over a corporation, and that's why we get on the phone with people, and usually in 15 minutes we can come up with the right entity for their particular situation.
Now, this is an area of specialty you've worked with for years. What are the formalities when you are setting things up, and what happens if you don't follow the formalities? Can you break those down for us?
Sure. Let's start with the second question. What happens if you don't follow the formalities? Well, they can pierce the corporate veil, meaning they can go right through the corporation's level of protection at you personally. So you've spent the time and money to set up the entity, but if you don't follow these very simple rules, they can go through the corporation and reach your personal assets. We don't want that. So what we do with our clients is make sure they're following these very simple formalities. Now, some of the formalities include paying the annual fees to the state. If you set up a state-chartered corporation, you have to pay an annual fee, and it varies from state to state. In California, it's $800 per year. In Wyoming, it's only $50 per year. So it varies from state to state. You also need to have a meeting once a year. Every state requires, whether it's a corporation or whatever entity, you have an annual meeting, and you need to write the meeting, the minutes of the meeting down, and have it in your corporate minute book. That will go a long way to show that you have followed the corporate formalities and are acting like a corporation. You also need a separate tax return, a separate bank account. These are all easy to do. There's not a big burden there. And if you follow them, the corporate veil will be up and you'll be protected. Another side note of benefit to this, Donna, is by having one of these entities, your audit rate with the IRS goes down. Sole proprietorships and general partnerships are audited at a 5 times greater rate than corporations and LLCs. So that's another side benefit to doing all this. But the key benefit is by following the formalities, you will be protected from your personal assets being exposed to a business claim.
Now, I had someone ask me a question that was looking at going into business, and I told them you were going to be on the air with me. And they said, ask him, I don't understand this about corporate minutes once a year. What exactly is it? I'm a small person. This person has a shop, and they formed an LLC, and I don't think they've ever done a corporation meeting once a year. Now, should you set that meeting time around the anniversary date of when you started your corporation? And what does that meeting entail?
Well, typically you have it at the anniversary date. The meeting will entail electing officers and directors, or in an LLC, managers for the upcoming year, approving all the activities that have taken place during the year. You also can have special minutes whereby you approve leases, you approve large transactions. But each state says you have to have minutes, or rather you have to have a meeting once a year to prove that you did. You file minutes, and it's just a rundown of what happened at the meeting. Many people in social organizations are used to doing minutes for their organization. The thing is, a lot of people never do them. It's just kind of a pain, and we offer a service whereby people can send in what they have. We can look at it and say, okay, you need minutes for 2009. We need to do this for 2011. We can clean it up. It's not a scarlet letter against you for not having done the minutes. They certainly can be corrected and cleaned up. But the important thing is that you have the minute book, which is a binder that consists of the articles, the bylaws of the operating agreement, the stock certificates, and the minutes. Now, if the IRS ever comes calling on an audit, having this minute book will go a long way in showing that you have followed the corporate formalities. If you get sued in a case and someone's looking to pierce the corporate veil, which is successful in half of all cases, you will have a minute book that shows that you have followed the formalities set forth by the state. So we do provide this service to help people clean up their minute book and be ready for the future.
So keeping a binder and having all of your documentation of your licensing, et cetera, is very important. Now, something else that you do, we don't hear people talking about this very often, is setting up something in the state of Nevada and or Wyoming. And I mentioned this to an individual, and they said, oh, that's cheating. And I said, no, it's not. So let's address this a little bit, Garrett, because we are in such a situation here in the United States, especially with all of the stuff that's been hitting regarding the IRS. I mean, there's just people haven't liked the IRS anyway. Nobody's ever liked the tax collector,
right?
No matter what time of history you're in. But here we are in a situation where there is this attitude of incompetence on the part of people in the area of government itself, and people literally can have a heart attack. They get so anxious about taxes. Let's address this, because this isn't cheating. This is totally legal, and it's something that's healthy for a prospective business person to consider. So tell us about this.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Not a lot, but you get it on occasion that, someone who really doesn't understand corporate law will say that, oh, by setting up in Nevada or Wyoming, you're cheating. It's not cheating at all. The IRS has never challenged the fact that you set up in Nevada or Wyoming. Whether you set up in whatever state you set up in, you have to pay federal taxes. The fact that you're in Nevada or Wyoming doesn't change that. The IRS is perfectly fine with it. And in fact, it's a constitutional right to travel issue. The Constitution says you have the right to set up wherever you want to. And by setting up in Nevada or Wyoming, you have better laws that get you better asset protection than you do in other states. So you're free to set up in Nevada or Wyoming, and then you have to qualify to do business in your home state. You'll pay taxes in your home state. There's nothing inappropriate about this at all. But the people who say that are either trying to, sell their services in the home state, or really don't understand the full extent of the law.
Now, I want to before we close out today, I want to ask a question that was posed to me. And that is, well, I've had my business for about 10 years, let's say in the state of Washington where I reside. Would it be of value for me to have something set up in Nevada? Can you do that after you've already been established in a particular state?
Yeah, Wyoming has a procedure called continuance where you can take the Washington entity and continue it or start it in Wyoming, and they give you the same incorporation date as when you started in Washington. You have the same EIN number. You don't lose your business credit. So there are ways to do that. There are also ways to have the Wyoming entity perhaps owned by a Nevada or have the Washington entity owned by a Nevada or Wyoming entity, and that also can provide a good measure of asset protection. You know, Donna, there's not one right answer for everybody, so it's just a matter of consulting with people, finding out what their specific situation is, and coming up with the best solution. And as you mentioned, this is all I do all day long, is help people structure their affairs to take advantage of the asset protection available.
Well, I think with the entrepreneurs of today, I don't care who they are, where they are, it is so important to know that there are steps we can take that are healthy for us financially. And that is invaluable because so many times we don't know who to talk to or who to go to. And there are so many areas of specialty when it comes to setting up a corporation. And even if you've gone to a business school, I've known people that have gone and gotten PhDs in business, and sometimes, believe it or not, they haven't been aware of some of the points that we have discussed today. And I think that it's very fortunate that we're able to do this with you, Garrett. Now, I do know that your Corporate Direct Incorporated Sutton Law Center is in Reno, Nevada. And if people want to find out more about you, you've got a website, corporatedirect.com. So for those of you that are thinking about going into business, those of you that want to explore, if you've already got an existing business, the options that are available to help you protect your assets, what to do, choices that you can make, that's the key, choice. Contact Garrett Sutton. I think that you will find, if you research the website, there's a lot there, and some of it you might be able to pass along the information to someone else that's in dire need of it. This is Donna Sebo. My guest has been Garrett Sutton. Garrett, as always, it's a pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Donna. It's been a pleasure.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break for just a moment. Don't forget to check out corporatedirect.com. Believe me, it can save you a lot of money, a lot of stress, and you'll enjoy doing business because you know you've taken care of what is most important to you, and that is your business and your personal assets. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to corporatedirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for corporatedirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. Well, I want to let you know about the guest that's coming up tomorrow. That is Bill Schley, and that's the Unstoppables. And we are going to be finding out exactly what that is. What is being unstoppable? What image does that convey to you? Well, I think you're going to find out exactly what that is. It's all about entrepreneurs. You know, we were talking just a moment ago about being in business. Well, I know you're going to enjoy Bill Schley. He's quite a guy. So we are going to be talking with him tomorrow. And then, high altitude woman. Wow. This is so powerful. Jan Reynolds is going to be my guest, and she is dynamic. Oh, boy, the stories of what this woman has gone through. Mountain climber, doing things that I don't think in a million years that I'd be doing, but by golly, she's going to be sharing that with us. And then on Friday, we're going to have an open mic day. So I'm looking forward to sharing that hour with you. Tell your friends. We've got a dynamic lineup. And oh my goodness, I just am so thrilled to be able to share these people and their experiences with you. Why? Because this enables you to find out about choices and options. It enables us to look at a world that's outside of ourselves. And many times we don't even have an opportunity to explore. If you're like me, like with what Jan would do, I don't think I'd be particularly interested in it. But wow, am I impressed with her stories. They are just phenomenal. Speaking of stories, I want to share with you one about, I think it's persistence, but it's more than that. And this is about a small town that was in a mountainous area. And this was in a very rugged country. Bandits were very common, and they would invade different villages, not unlike what goes on today. Well, there was one day when bandits came down from the mountains and attacked this particular town, and they kidnapped the baby, and they took the baby to a hideout that they had. Well, the mother, you can imagine, was despondent. I mean, to have her baby ripped away from her and taken off by these hooligans, these bandits, is something that if ever you can imagine experience like that, it's traumatizing. Well, the villagers, who were basically very peaceful people, wanted to rescue the child, but they didn't know a lot about the various trails that the bandits used. They had developed their own sort of infrastructure of secret trails. And the bandits would come on them constantly, and the people just didn't know where to look. And there were a lot of sheer cliffs that would have to be climbed. So the villagers themselves, even though the heart was, let's rescue the child, were often at a loss of how to do that. Well, days went by. They finally said, we haven't been able to find them. We don't know where they are. And they were so distraught over not being able to rescue the baby. However, it wasn't too long after those that had wanted to do the rescue. See, the mother coming out of the forest that surrounded the village and attached to her back, strapped in, was her baby. And the town leader was just thrilled to see her and said, how were you able to find the peak, the place where the bandits are, when the strongest and most ablest of our men weren't even able to do it? And the woman just looked at him and she smiled. She was very tired. It had been very grueling for her. She said these few words, it wasn't your baby. Powerful story. This is Donna Sebo. I know that we're out of time. Won't you join me tomorrow and tell your friends? We have got a lot of good information to share. And I'm delighted, and I know that you will enjoy The Unstoppable. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never think that you don't make a difference, because you do. You are very, very significant. Your light is just as important as anyone else's. Remember that as you go about your day's business. Remember that how you think, how you act, does make a difference and has an impact that many times cannot even be measured. And every once in a while, someone will tell you how much they appreciate who you really are because you're being true to yourself. Take care. God bless. We'll talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.